Welcome to this week's Key Voices. I'm Caroline Doherty, bringing you a roundup of the latest education news and an interview with our special guest, David Weston, CEO of the Teacher Development Trust. Firstly, the news headlines this week. The 2019 A-level results have been released. 25.2% of pupils in England achieved an A to A star grade this year, down 1% from last year. The TES has reported on Dame Esther Ranson's concerns that rising numbers of students are seeking counselling due to anxiety over exam results. The NSPCC-run Childline said that it had provided more than 1,400 counselling sessions to children and young people regarding exam worries, up by around 50% on 4 years ago. Schools Week has reported that the Edexcel maths exam A-level leak was bigger than first thought, with the entire paper being circulated on social media ahead of the exam. Edexcel's parent company confirmed that 78 pupils who sat the exam are having their results withheld while it investigates the leak, which has so far led to the arrests of two people. Also this week, The Independent has reported that a record 80,000 students are expected to take up places on degrees through clearing this year, as universities scramble to fill courses. A week ago, 3 in 4 of the country's leading institutions had vacancies on their undergraduate programmes. The BBC has reported on Labour's announcement that it would scrap the system of university places being offered on the basis of predicted grades and bring in a system where students would apply after getting their results. The party says the allocation of places on predicted grades is deeply unfair. And Tory MP Suella Braverman says free schools could agree to reduced per pupil funding to help fund start-up costs. She said that the free schools programme could grind to a halt if the government does not change rules that restrict them to areas with a shortage of places. And now onto our interview series with David Weston. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much, Caroline.
Hi, nice to see you as a friend of the Key. So we are going to have a conversation today a little bit about the work that Teacher Development Trust do, improving teaching and learning, CPD within schools. So I just wanted to start by understanding the focus of the work that you do is on improving teaching and learning, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. There's nothing more important in schools than making sure that teaching is better and that children are succeeding as a result. It's always the thing which every head teacher knows, every senior leader knows. If I can get teaching to be better, everything else falls into place. Mm-hmm. And also, it makes sense from a leadership point of view, but it also makes sense even just from a pure sort of financial point of view. Schools are spending 70, 80% of their budget on employing people. So how do you make sure those people are doing what you need them to do? And you think about how much time senior leaders think, how much money and time they're thinking of maintaining the building. So are you thinking about spending the right time, the right resources on maintaining and improving the people so that your people are really delivering? Because ultimately, as we've seen in some notable cases where a building is burnt down or someone's had to be evacuated, you can still run a school with the people.
Mm.
But if you lose the people, you haven't got the school.
Yes, I see exactly what you're saying there. We're going to come on to talk a little bit about the essential ingredients of high quality CPD. But what would you say is the difference between what we know to be CPD and improving teaching and learning?
That's a great question. And I think in many schools, people will say we have a strategy to improve the quality of teaching and learning.
Mm.
And then part of that is, oh, and then there's some CPD, it's like training. But for me, that's kind of not the right way around, because if you think about CPD as just delivering some information, then that's a bit like saying you saying to me, David, you're going to get better nutrition, and the way you're going to do it is I'm going to deliver this box of ingredients to you.
Mm.
And actually, I don't, just by having the ingredients doesn't make me healthier. It's only when I have time to cook with them, to eat with them, to develop the habits of cooking and eating, that's what makes the difference. So if all you do is plan some CPD, here is some input, and you don't plan how people are going to use it, you haven't really done anything to teaching and learning. I think the other thing is lots of people say, I've got CPD on the one hand, which is telling people stuff or getting them out on courses. And on the other hand, I have this whole strategy of sort of monitoring and evaluating teaching. And somehow they're not connected together. But where schools are doing this really effectively, you've got one strategy for improving teaching and improving people and developing people. So I wouldn't separate them out. And I would say, if you've got a senior leadership team where one person does CPD and the other person does teaching and learning, which I've seen quite frequently, how do you connect and combine all of that together? And in a little while, we'll talk about some examples of where schools are doing that really effectively. So it's all one side of the same coin. A strategy to make teaching better. How do you do that?
I love that nutrition analogy. That's so clear.
I love a good food analogy, always. Yeah.
I worry that there are these boxes of healthy ingredients that are just going rotten because they're not getting cooked with.
Oh yeah, look, we've all done that. You go to the supermarket and you buy something fancy and you say, I'm going to use that. And then it goes brown and mushy in your salad drawer, doesn't it? And you kind of, oh, I never used it. It happens in my household with coriander. You always say, I'm going to buy that. And you buy a packet and then it goes brown. So, and to be honest, I mean, it's flippant, but the same thing does happen in schools. Mm. We sometimes say to teachers, right, I'm going to give you all these insets and twilight sessions. And then, by the way, now just get on with the day job. And goes brown and mushy.
And it can be hard, I guess, in the cycle of choosing what CPD to do, or the courses and activities that people attend, or the books that they read, and then they don't get the opportunity to actually use them quickly or in the right context. And yeah, I think it's really clear to think about this.
So I always say CPD is like a trip to the supermarket. It's what you do with what you bring back that counts.
And what would you say are the, let's go back to the food analogy, what are the essential ingredients of a high quality piece of CPD or training?
So we're thinking about a whole learning experience. To use the food analogy, it's figuring out where do I need to get to? So what's my nutrition goal, or what's my entertainment goal, or whatever it is? And then you say, right, what ingredients do I need to buy, and when do I need to buy them? And then how do I prepare my cooking skills? And you plan something over a period of time. And that's exactly what we do in schools. So leaders who really effectively improve teaching, they look at a whole year or even 2-3 years of timetable. And they say, right, first of all, when am I planning for? So I've got my insets and my twilights, but then I've got my whole school meetings, and then I've got my team meetings. Yeah. So it could be like phase team meeting or subject meeting. And then I've also got some informal time where people have time to plan lessons or time to do other things. All of those are opportunities for learning. Mm. So you then need to think to yourself, let's say we're going to improve reading. So we need to say, okay, so we need some time to get everyone on the same page to know what the problem is we're solving. Yeah. And everyone's identifying examples of, you know, where reading's not worked well and where it has worked well and what we do now. And then we have to plan some expert inputs where we're going to work with some inspirational and expert practitioners who will model some practices and give feedback on what we're doing now. Then we need some time for people to figure out what does that mean, say, for their phase or for their subject. And they try things out and they're exploring and experimenting. And then people coming together again and reflecting, how's it gone, and talking to an experts again. And the idea is you're creating something that lasts a period of time. The fantastic researcher Philippa Accordingly, she's amazing, and she uses this wonderful analogy of power lines. And she said, the thing that's most visible are the pylons, but they're not actually the thing that carries the electricity. And inset days and twilights are the most visible thing, but they're not the thing that carry the learning, right? It's what goes between them that makes the difference. I like that analogy as well. So actually, for schools, don't just plan CPDs and twilights. Plan everything. But then linked to that, you've got to think to yourself, what conversations are people having? So when do you, in your appraisal and performance management, are people then saying, what do I need to learn about? What am I learning about? How do I embed that learning? And in your monitoring systems, are you taking people away from their focus on learning and improving? Or are you focusing them on the real big questions? And all of those systems connect together. And then ultimately you say, oh, wow, actually, that affects how I timetable people so that they can collaborate. It affects the way we set meeting agendas. It affects the way that we run all of these different systems. So when you're planning, plan for the long term. So going back to your question, what are the key ingredients? We need it to be sustained over time. It needs to have multiple opportunities to try out practice, reflect what's going well, get expert input. That's quite important. It's not just, if I work with the same people I always work with, I'll get the same perspectives I always get. So sometimes I need to figure out what I'm doing now, but I need to get someone just to challenge my thinking a little bit.
Yeah.
So some expert input. And then giving teachers that opportunity to try things out, but most importantly, check if they're making a difference. So the best teacher development asks teachers to say, what difference do you need to make and how will you know if you've made it? So actually then as a leader, you're coming to me and saying, David, so you're working on reading in the minute. So tell me, how's it going? How do you know? How have you evaluated the impact you're having? What evidence do you have? So sustained, multiple opportunities, expert input, chance for people to try things out in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And then of course, all of that has to be in a climate where I feel I can work in a team and I feel trusted to get on with things and challenged just enough that I'm excited, but not overly stressed.
Yeah. And obviously in the Teacher Development Trust, you support schools. Can you tell me a little bit about the way that you work with them to ensure that there is that quality?
Yeah, we always think of this as a journey because some schools have been focusing on honing their skills and leadership in this area for several years. Others have said, okay, we're really starting at square one, or I'm taking over a school where things are a bit of a mess. Mm. So the first thing we always do is say, how effectively are you improving teaching, professional development, and your workforce more broadly? So we'll always start by saying, give us your self-reflections, we'll look at your policies and procedures, we'll do a staff survey, we'll come in and interview people, and we'll do a 360 and say what's working well and what needs to get better. And then based on that, we will then say, right, you know, in some cases it might be you have just no culture of collaboration. Maybe that's one of the first things we need to do. In other areas, it's your professional development plan doesn't really match up with your school development plan. How do we connect them together? Or in other cases, it might be your teacher's not very engaged with the research evidence. How can we build them up to gradually engage more with those ideas so that they're using the research to impact the right sorts of things? Or it could be working on teaching assistance or career development or all those sorts of things. But ultimately, working with the school, bit of support, bit of challenge, say, what's the low-hanging fruit that's going to get you to where you need to be this year? And we always say it's a multiple-year journey. You don't just in 1 year change from a school where people aren't developing to the perfect institution. So we like to support that, you know, with coaching, and we offer training and events and so on. But I think it's really important that we're working with a school to say, let's figure out what's already working and what's not. And one of the most fascinating things is sitting down with staff or someone from outside the school and saying, what's your learning like here?
Yeah.
And I've had anything from these sort of people practically leaping for joy and buzzing to people generally breaking down in tears and saying, now that I think about it, I haven't really learned, I haven't been developing, I haven't really been had any control over my journey for such a long time, and I'm tired and I'm exhausted. But we can help.
Yeah, and I guess in some instances it will be because people haven't experienced schools in their career to this point where things are working.
You're absolutely right. A big project we've been doing recently, we were funded by the DfE to work in 5 particularly disadvantaged areas. So some areas which, you know, traditionally places like Blackpool or Luton or Stoke-on-Trent, where there's a lot of social disadvantage. And we're working with schools who are either inadequate or special measures. So it just so many factors that made it really tough. And in a lot of those places, so many people have been telling them for so long, you're not good enough. New leaders would come in and tell the staff, you're not good enough, we're not good enough. And it would all be monitoring and top down. And ultimately, these schools were not shifting. They were just adding more and more sticking plasters. People were exhausted, turnover was high, results weren't improving. So the thing you have to do is you have to give a little bit of hope back. You have to help leaders believe it's possible to run a school where you very systematically and coherently, but nevertheless inspirationally, move people forward. And what's been an absolute delight is going back to some of those schools after year one, after year two, and beginning to see, wow, look, your turnover's really reducing. People are beginning to say, I chose to come to this school because I'm hearing good things. Staff who say, honestly, I thought I was just coasting now till the end of my career, but now I feel I've got my verve back, I've got my mojo. And for example, in one of the schools, someone went round to some of the staff that they felt were stuck, and they just asked them the question, so when in your career have you been learning, were you learning the best? Like, when was your most exciting moment of learning? And then if they just kept finding people said, oh yeah, 15 years ago I was doing a master's, but it got stopped. Or I used to do this project then, but I guess there's no opportunities to do that anymore. But gradually they just found little keys and said, well, what if we gave you a bit of that? And what if we found you opportunities to do that again? And some of these people just came back to life. Mm-hmm. And that's a joy.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just thinking, you know, a lot of people who go into teaching obviously really enjoyed learning as as students, as learners, as, you know, potentially people doing further study themselves. And, you know, for various very understandable reasons, people become distanced from that joy of learning.
Absolutely.
And it just feels like another thing that's piled on top of an already really busy day job.
Yeah, absolutely. And the trouble is, the more you're under pressure, the more people feel they have to pile more things on you. And as a school leader, you're thinking, well, Ofsted are going to come in. Is it the old framework or the new? And I've heard 15 rumours from people nearby of the thing that like failed them or succeeded. And so I have to cover all those bases. So I have to do all those things and get everyone up to speed. And everyone gets exhausted and weighed down.
Yeah.
And as with many things, it's having a simple, clear, shared vision for teaching that everybody, you start unlocking the best in everybody. They can kind of pursue that agenda together. And it's not just leaders dragging everybody forward. It's everyone, no, we're using our collective energy to move things forward. And there's nothing fluffy about this as well. Some people say, oh, well, you know, if I'm focusing on development, then you're not really monitoring and really making sure that teachers are getting better.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a really robust, rigorous conversation if you're saying to me, oh, right, so you're learning about improving vocabulary right now, and you're evaluating the impact, so tell me what's the impact. Okay, I think maybe go back and try this. But now I'm empowered to figure out the answers, but also you've helped me really see what the problem is. And so often as leaders, you're saying, I need you to do this, I need you to do this, and the staff just think, oh, it's just another thing because I don't see the need for it. And then that's a change problem. And psychologically, then, you're the leader, I'm the teacher, and we both think the other one are at fault for nothing changing.
Yeah.
So we can have a robust, rigorous process that does lead to school improvement. And the great stuff is that, you know, even Ofsted recognise this. And in their new framework, there's an exciting opportunity around curriculum where we can re-engage people to say, what is the sequence of teaching that's going to help my children learn? And that helps me teach things in the right order to achieve mastery and progression. And that's a really exciting opportunity. We've got an event running in October, and the idea is to say, let's think about what Ofsted says and what key curriculum thinkers say, but how do we empower our middle leaders to do this stuff? So it's not, again, just like improvement from the senior leadership. It's every single middle leader and subject leader and phase leader and year leader saying, what does it mean for me? How do I co-create this curriculum? And then it feels shared and owned, and it's really exciting.
And as you say, then very central to what people are doing, and not this kind of development, I don't know, cherry on the top that you get to think about when you've done everything else that you need to do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So it all comes together. I mean, Dame Alison Peacock, I think she used the phrase the Holy Trinity of curriculum, assessment and people development. And you connect all those dots together, and you know what you're going to teach, and you know how you're going to know if it's been taught, and you know how you're going to develop people to teach it, then that's where the magic happens.
Indeed. And can you tell us a bit about you know, some of the schools in your network? Maybe give us a few sort of examples and ideas about how they've managed to balance all of their other issues and concerns, and also run kind of evidence-informed, really high-quality professional learning?
So I think it's a matter of what resources do you have now and what things can you already do that you can connect together and repurpose. And this is definitely, CPD should never feel like a, oh, and then also. So I think there's sort of a couple of background thoughts on this. Is first of all, look at how much you're spending on recruitment. Think about the amount of time you spend on adverts and interviewing and recruitment. And if you could reduce that a little bit and make people want come to you, that would be really effective. How much are you spending on cover and sick leave? How much are you spending on the insurance for all of that? How much are you then requiring other people to do cover?
Yeah.
And what happens if you could reduce that a little bit? And actually, if you can reduce those two numbers, that frees up a lot of resource, which you can begin, of time and money, which you can begin to say, okay, maybe we can put in professional development. The next one is to say, look at meeting agendas, whole school meeting agendas and middle leadership team meeting agendas. How much stuff is in there that could go in an email? You have to train people to read the email, but imagine how much time you could repurpose towards pedagogy and development. So that's using a resource, and we've seen loads of schools do this, gently shifting and pushing the meetings and changing them so that it becomes more and more and more about development. And then look at your school development plan. What are the big priorities for us as a school? Then have a look at what are the big priorities for all of the teams. And then from performance management conversations, what are the individual's priorities? How do I weave those three layers together to create a plan that's really coherent? Because when it doesn't work so well, you've got a school development plan and interventions going on there. And then separately, you've got a CPD plan. And then you've also got a separate teaching and learning monitoring plan. And actually, many schools can do is they just align it all together, and it actually feels they're doing less and doing it better.
Yeah,
That's easier said than done.
And it does force you to prioritise, and you, like you say, you can't then do everything, and there is always that pressure, as you say, from Ofsted or whomever else it is to feel like you're across everything.
Completely. One of the things, a lot of the schools we work with will often say that, first of all, in senior leadership team, teaching and learning becomes a standing item. Mm. And they don't just say, and it's definitely not monitoring the quality of teaching and learning. Yeah. It's the whole strategy for improving teaching and learning. They have people who lead on key elements of that, and every member of SLT has something to do with teaching and learning.
Yeah.
Whether it's like, okay, I'm focusing on the HR elements around it, I'm focusing on performance management, I'm focusing on curriculum, I'm focusing on CPD. I'm focusing on development of pastoral teams, but everyone sees developing people as a core part, and it's not just one person. And then how does it become a standing item in middle leadership team meetings, so that every time they meet the people, a core part, if not the key part of that meeting, is let's think of something we teach, how could we teach it better, where are the issues, where are the strengths, how do we develop that? Because once you create a rhythm of that over a few years, that accumulates and accumulates and accumulates of just the focus. So there are a few that they're relatively easy wins, these things. You can then begin to change the timetable, maybe close early, a little earlier on one day, a little later on some other days, and you maybe create some time every single week. Lots of schools are moving to every single week. We have 45 minutes, an hour and a half, depends on what you can manage, of all staff coming together, in many cases, hopefully with TAs for some of it as well. A regular slot where there's a bit of input, lots of time to work with colleagues in your similar subject or phase, and then time to just work and think hard together. Also, people are then timetabling freeze so that, or PPA time, so that departments can informally come together at certain times. So again, those are slightly harder wins. Other people say, oh, you know, we'll have fewer staff in assembly and free some others up, or we'll use some external facilitators for sport or art or music. And other cultural activities, and then free some teachers up. There are lots of different ways around. We help everyone can find some way to engineer it for them. And then also the ultimate, and the final thing is if you're the head teacher, how much expertise does my SLT have for making teaching better? Not, again, not just monitoring, but the whole science, the research, the practice of making this better. Invest in that, invest in the leadership of it. And actually, suddenly your whole SLT will be engaged and enthused about making this happen.
Yeah, and are there any particular examples, individual schools or groups of schools that you've worked with that you think have done some interesting work here? Any kind of practical tips from them?
Trouble is, there's no one size fits all here,
as you
because
say,
every school is on its own journey. Just a few little examples, though. One school I've been working with recently, they made this big shift, particularly around middle leaders. They took their middle leadership, when all their middle leaders come together like and have meetings, they took those and said, right, we're going to repurpose those and be a bit less about admin and a lot more skilling them up to line manage and skilling them up to run a good meeting about teaching and learning. And in some cases, that was just identifying best practice and sharing it. And then in other cases, then sharing a little bit of stimulus and saying, how could we get even better? And then sometimes budding them up to look at each other's departments. That then led into the head teacher and the SLT saying, we're going to be less prescriptive about what you have in your meetings. We're going to give you more time. And then just in that line management where senior leaders meet middle leaders, they're just then, it's a standing order, it's a standing item on their question. So what have you covered in teaching and learning this week? How have you facilitated that? How are you building capacity for that in your team? Those are not major tweaks, but actually that investment already, that not only got more curriculum thinking, but also staff were saying, it feels better because actually we're having more relevant conversations because they're within, it's within a group of teachers who teach similar things to me.
Yeah, great. And you founded TDT in 2012, am I right?
That's right, yes.
As a teacher yourself, and what change have you seen in that time about how these issues are tackled, and where do you think things are heading in the future? Where do you hope they're heading in the future?
I think, 2012 was really interesting. We were kind of at the beginning of the sort of the Gove era, if you like. So it was still lots of things being dismantled and that kind of slightly sort of, yeah, let's just like change the whole system and schools will fend for themselves, school-led system. But it wasn't really clear where it was heading. And things are a lot more mature now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more collaborations have emerged.
Yeah.
You're getting academy trusts who are a bit more mature. You're getting schools clustering together within local authorities and around teaching schools. Mm-hmm. And things are just a little bit more settled in that sense. Not everywhere. Some people are going to guffaw when they hear me say that. But in the background of that, then, we also went from a point of, oh, it's fine, schools will just deal with this agenda of teacher development. And now I've got a whole bunch of things which are exciting. You've got the Chartered College of Teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, well, as a profession, we have set up our own professional body, and suddenly it's gone from zero to 30,000 members, and suddenly it's got a chartered teacher status, and suddenly it's in the middle of government conversations, and you think, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And schools beginning to say, wow, I can invest in people to become chartered teachers, for example, as a non-management career route. And then you've got things like Research Ed, these incredible conferences run on Saturdays, very low-cost academics and researchers and practitioners and school leaders all coming together and having amazing conversations. And then you've got the DfE saying, we've got our CPD standards. We're saying, we have a vision now for what effective CPD looks like. And that was the group, what my group did a few years ago. But now they're also saying, well, actually, do you know what? To improve recruitment and retention, we need routes to keep teachers in teaching that mean when you progress, you don't have to do less teaching.
Yeah.
So how can you become a specialist? And they're thinking like that. There's lots of really exciting things emerging. But it needs everyone to kind of get on the agenda together.
Mm.
And it does need government to kind of calm down a little bit in the background.
Yeah.
And on the day we're recording this, you know, it's a interesting period politically. So government calming down, no sign of that.
No.
But there's many pitfalls still ahead of us, but there's a lot of exciting strengths in the system right now. So it's a very different place from in 2012, where it was sort of, okay, we've got rid of stuff, but what's going to happen? Now we're seeing things emerging, and if we seize that as a profession and don't just sit back and say, well, government's got to do it, then I think we're the profession in England in particular, that we could look back at this and say this was the start of a golden era.
Oh, wow. I hope that is true.
Me too.
Thank you very much for your time and your insights there, David. Lots to think about, and lots of practical ideas for people about how they can make time for improving teaching and learning in their schools. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much for listening. Key Voices is produced by The Key, giving education leaders the knowledge to act. Members of The Key for School Leaders can access hundreds of articles on the latest issues in education at thekeysupport.com.